I thank the organizers for letting me start in the morning, because for those of you who were there at the Strings meeting, at least in this way I could make sure that my laptop was working before I got started. So if we look at the present situation in our efforts to try and connect string theory with particle physics, is it on? Okay. Then we're essentially faced again with this multiple choices situation, where the number of possibilities seems enormous. And if we imagine that this sort of looks like all the range of possibilities, I don't mean that there are just six possible choices. Actually, what I try to say here is that typically, if we want to do particle phenomenology within string theory or to go towards the standard model, there are a couple of approximations or limits of string theory where we have some control. And typically, you would have to make assumptions that you're either in a hadronic string compactification or in a G2 compactification of M theory or something else. But we know that the bulk of what string theory is actually far away from many of those points. And if we're sort of realistic about what the possibilities are, then it might be pretty likely that the right point that would connect with our world might be sitting down there. With this, I mean to say actually that it might be sitting there, but all these other points, at least there may be regions there where you can find points that are also consistent with the experiment. And the question is, what are the hints that we have, and what are the guiding principles by which we sort of guide our way through this? I'm going to be terribly unoriginal and take my own two principles. One is the correspondence principle. The other one is Occam's razor. First of all, that there should be a limit, and that's sort of the key question. Is there a limit of string theory that actually contains the standard model? And essentially purely a limit of string theory that is purely quantum field theory. And Occam's razor, essentially what one would like to do is make this connection with particle physics in a way that assumes the fewest hypothetical entities and makes the fewest assumptions. So translated, the two questions that are motivated by these principles for me are, is there a decoupling limit of string theory? That is the standard model, which is actually a different question than finding the string compactification that connects with the standard model. But is there a decoupling limit of string theory, where essentially one ignores gravity and tries to connect with quantum field theory? And the other one is that this particular construction, you would like to have it be in a form where all the geometric data of string theory are essentially in one-to-one correspondence with the quantum field theory parameters. There's no extra structures that you have to assume, of which in the end you cannot be certain that they are actually there. So going back to our problem, the way at least I sort of take my own view on this is that I'd like to look at the possibility that the quantum field theories that we're interested in look very close to the quantum field theories that one can obtain or from D-brains at singularities in 2B string theory. And it's the one in which we understand the decoupling limit best. And the motivation of this is that, okay, you could have this point, or the previous point, or you could have that point. But all of these points, indeed, there are some range in the Planck regime where string theory is strongly coupled. But we do know that in low energy and in particle physics, there are weakly coupled, at least reasonably weakly coupled degrees of freedom, which is the standard model. And regardless from which of these initial points one starts, there's a particular structure here that remains the same if the low energy field theory is the standard model. And the idea is to try to focus on that particular structure. So first I wanted to state a conjecture, and then I chickened out and put the star there, so it's a very wimpy conjecture. Under a suitable definition of almost, every string model that exhibits a gauge hierarchy admits a duality frame such that all the gauge dynamics is described by open strings attached to D-brains near Clavier singularity. I might want to go a little bit further. Maybe if I remove the open strings attached and maybe even the D-brain. But I would say every string model that exhibits a gauge hierarchy admits a duality frame such that the gauge dynamics is described near a Calabi-Yau singularity. That might be my conjecture. Okay. And then I might want to remove the star. You can use the D-brains as well, but you do anything near a Calabi-Yau and everything is localized there. And if there's a gauge hierarchy, I claim that there's a duality frame where you should be able to do that. What I claim is that there's a duality frame where that particular string theory can also be described by the other type 2B string theory in this particular way. And when I say that, I mean that the low energy physics is very well described by this. Over here, I could have some very strongly coupled physics, and indeed the heterolic string might be the right theory in the Planck regime. But I'm saying that my open strings might be the Calabi-Yau singularity might actually be the most convenient description for the low energy regime. No, at least I just, not necessarily. I would say if you have a low energy regime where quantum field theory arises, then there must be a way to let, morally you're right in the sense that this would give you a geometric way of thinking about a gauge hierarchy. So that's my assumption here, that for every theory with a gauge hierarchy, there's a duality frame where that gauge hierarchy is put in geometric terms. So that's the idea. So as I said, then the motivation is that in this particular case, one can take a decoupling limit. And indeed, in the standard model, and that's what the gauge hierarchy sort of tells us, is that the gauge invariant couplings are frozen. And in this particular setup, they're actually tuned and even stronger in one-to-one correspondence with deformations of the local geometry. And this is sort of where I sort of come back to my sort of, organizing principle, that I want things to be sort of almost most economic as possible in terms of the ingredients that I want to introduce. Yes, I can apply asymmetric, if you want, asymmetric orbifolds applied to this particular picture. Obviously, I include all the tools in the game. It's a conjecture, so I can conjecture what I want. But I think if you want to disprove it, try and disprove it. So once you have this particular setup, and indeed the standard model looks already pretty close, like it's realizable from these ingredients. So if we're interested in the gauge theories that look realistic, then especially this particular setup already shows some promise. So let's get to a little bit more sort of ingredients in what goes into the construction. At this point, it may seem that I'm introducing a lot of extra stuff, but eventually the idea is that there's only so much stuff as the standard model has, that's what we want to include. But the basic point, which was also mentioned yesterday in Angel Uranga's talk, is when you have D-brains at singularities, you have the fractional brains, and essentially what happens is that the singularity is a cone which has a particular base, which in the cases that I've been looking at is a four-dimensional manifold where you can have a four-cycle that essentially shrinks to a point, and then within that four-cycle there are two cycles, and there's obviously just the zero cycle, and correspondingly in 2B string theory you can wrap those cycles by seven brains, five brains, and three brains. And appropriate bound states of those ingredients are the fractional brains. And therefore, I will label the fractional brains by a bunch of integers, the seven-brain charge, the five-brain charge, which are wrapping numbers around cycles, which I call alpha A, and there's the three-brain charge. And then with these ingredients, you can get matter content by looking at the intersections between the various brains, and there's an easy way of computing that. But a key motivation, again, of this is that there's a dictionary between gauge theory quantities and geometric quantities, just like in ADS-CFT. And although that dictionary is roughly known, it's not completely known, but morally speaking, we sort of have convinced ourselves that there is a one-to-one correspondence between the closed string geometry and the gauge theory parameters. The most rigid of that is the connection between the superpotential and the complex structure. And assuming initially that one, at least in the regime where one would first keep the singularity somewhat larger relative to the string scale, then you can also have more control over the other parameters. And in that regime, there are geometric formulas that essentially relate the gauge coupling, for example, in the Fi parameter to the central charge of the D-brain, of the fractional brain. And again, in this geometric regime, there are particular formulas one can write down. So at least one can imagine that by tuning these parameters, these particular closed string parameters, one can tune the parameters of the gauge theory. And the way I see this is that eventually, since we want to look in this particular approach initially at physics that's already at the TEV scale, this allows us to sort of look at the shape of the standard model if we would be able to parameterize the standard model in this particular way. Yes? Although I'm being a little bit more generic here, basically the Yukawa couplings are governed by the superpotential, but there are aspects of the Yukawa couplings modulo field redefinitions if I wouldn't know about the kinetic terms. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So in terms of the quantitative predictions that one can directly obtain from this particular approach, maybe at the moment I'm rather modest. I would say simply the fact that there is this tunability, which is sort of something that we understand. So if I'm in the continuous deformation, the space of continuous deformations of the standard model, if I can get there by a geometric construction, then I simply should have faith that the geometric construction also will allow me to tune things in a particular direction. And gradually you want to make those things more quantitative as you go along, but that's a lot of hard work involved in that, clearly. Now, this is exactly how the complex structure is tuned, for example. Well, we use fluxes, indeed, for example, to tune the complex structure of the full Calabi-Yau singularity, which allows the same fluxes to also tune the complex structure of a Calabi-Yau surface. And near the singularity, you can also use the same mechanism to try and tune. So the tuning, and that's in this picture over here, eventually takes place over here. That's the way I look at it. Is if I allow myself to tune over here based on experimental data, if you like, then I can try to sort of bring that information to the geometric regime of the Calabi-Yau manifold, and then one would have to sort of scan the landscape to look for manifolds that would satisfy the requirements that you want. So that's the idea, is to sort of separate issues, first knowing what kind of geometry I want, and then later on look for dynamical mechanisms in which string theory might want to end up there by appropriate fluxes and other things that generate potentials for that compactification. So let me move up here. So here, so these are the animals that one would like to sort of look at. And indeed, those masses are in particular things that you would like to be able to tune. Another set of numbers, which is less random than those masses, are the hypercharge. And in the remainder of this talk, I'll explain how to make constructions that essentially indeed give you the quantum numbers of all these animals, including also the hypercharge. Now, as was explained, if you have D-brains at singularities, you get typically quiver diagrams. And actually, most people that have used D-brains to build the standard model indeed ended up with a construction that is sort of summarized by this particular diagram, where indeed the individual brains give you gauge groups, and then by intersections between the brains, you get bifundamentals. And if you take those particular rules and you try to represent the standard model purely in terms of bifundamental matter, you end up with this particular quiver diagram, which in a conversation with Brett was called the Spanish quiver between us. So I'll just give it that name because I think it first appeared indeed in the Madrid group's papers. Maybe there's an earlier reference of it, but essentially the idea is then the following, is that this indeed, the triangles in this particular diagram give you the possible Yukawa couplings. An important ingredient is that this particular construction involves orientifolds. So rather than U, SU2, you get SP2 over here. But essentially all the quantum numbers and couplings of the standard model are in this, except for some extra U1 symmetries, essentially baryon number, lepton number. But the thing I want to explain in what follows is how to make sure that only hypercharge survives as a massless symmetry if you would be able to make this particular quiver. I should add at this point, although we have ideas about it, that we don't have a direct construction of this quiver yet in terms of brains at singularities, but I think that's only a matter of time. It's just sort of understanding properly how to do orientifolds of Glabeyau singularities. There are particular conditions which are just equivalent to cancellation of non-abelian anomalies, essentially, that are local tadpole conditions. So those you would have to satisfy. Other sort of more global tadpole conditions are more adjustable because the flux can go out of this cone. And so that's part of the compactification step. Another thing, anomalous U1s will become massive via a known mechanism. But part of the idea is that in this case, there's actually also a non-anomalous U1. You want, and how do you make that thing massive? Can I have a few extra minutes later? Yes, it would fit in the framework insofar as if there are irrelevant particular operators that accommodate that particular physics, then in principle one can turn those on in this particular scenario. On the other hand, I would say that if you really talk about grand unification, then that's a really sort of a drastic extra ingredient that indeed is actually one of the things that I look forward to sort of understanding better how to put that in terms of geometry. So for now, I'm sort of trying to be economic in terms of the degrees of freedom of the standard model, which is sort of the general approach that most people have been taking with when they use the D-brains. And that's also for the part of the philosophy of this bottom-up perspective. So the kind of work one would need to do in order to make this thing from a D-brain at a particular Glabeyau singularity, you would first have to go to the cover quiver of that previous thing, which would look like this. So the idea is to just find a singularity that would have a quiver that would look like this. Then you put the fractional brains here to just make sure that the ranks of the gauge groups are appropriate. And then you divide out by an orientifold that interchanges those two nodes but keeps those nodes fixed. And then in principle, you would have that particular quiver. And the idea of this whole thing of writing down the quivers is sort of to divide up the problem of connecting with the standard model in a two-step process. First, from the string theory perspective, you want to make this particular thing. From a phenomenology perspective, you actually ask, well, once you have this thing, which phenomenological problems or maybe which phenomenological features are the ones that you have to deal with? The one that we actually do know how to make is one without an orientifold, but it has an extra feature which I try to hide as good as possible, that it has too many Higgs fields. But for the rest, essentially the same idea is there, that all the three generations of quarks and leptons are there with the proper Yukawa couplings and the proper gauge groups. But again, with the problem that there are too many U1s, in this case, there are actually way too many U1s in this particular system. But we now have control of how to break those U1 symmetries in a rather direct fashion. So what I'm not going to explain in detail is that the quiver gauge theory that I had on the previous transparency can be made from a Delpezzo 8 singularity, but considering only a single D3 brain on it, which is sort of surprising that a single D3 brain is enough. But you have to do something a little bit with this gauge theory on the Delpezzo singularity amounts to a symmetry breaking, which can be geometrically governed, and that's again an advantage of this formalism, is that expectation values, you basically have a dial that can tell you what the expectation values are, which are the FI parameters, and in this case you want to sort of do a particular symmetry breaking that happens to be associated with blowing up or making two of the cycles of this Glabeyau singularity large. The Delpezzo 8 surface has many two cycles, which basically are in one-to-one correspondence with these dots. And it's the blue dots that are actually wrapped by brains. So again, I'm not going to give you the details. You give yourself wrapping numbers of certain fractional brains around these cycles, and you just check that the intersection numbers and the multiplicities are those of the diagram that I had before, which is a first start of connecting with something that looks standard model-like. So this one comes out from that construction. But again, there's a very specific linear combinations of the U1s that corresponds to hypercharge. And one of the things that you then want to do is you want to see if you look at the wrapping numbers of the individual brains and you sum those wrapping numbers with the coefficients of the linear combination that is hypercharged, then a particular cycle, a two-cycle within the singularity that's associated with hypercharge. So the linear combination of fractional brains that wraps that particular cycle is the linear combination of fractional brains associated with hypercharge. So the question is, how can I make sure that all these other U1s are massive and this one remains massless? And there's a rather simple way of doing that. So the way in which that happens is indeed to use the mechanism that's known for anomalous U1s, but just look a little bit more carefully in general context, in this particular context. And the mechanisms that makes the U1s massless is the Zuckerberg coupling. It's a linear coupling between the trace of F of the gauge field, U1 gauge field on the brain, to a more and more two form, which for these fractional brains, because they're sort of bound state combinations of brains, is some linear combinations of the 6 and the 4 and the 2 form of the 10-dimensional theory integrated over appropriate cycles. So this particular combination, and this combination will be able to give a mass, this field will be able to give a mass to the factor boson, provided actually this particular field turns out to be a dynamical field in 4 dimensions. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So if you have the basis of normalizable modes in the full Calabi-Yau, so here's an important point which I forgot to emphasize, is that the mechanism, and this is a little bit counter to the philosophy that I was describing earlier, that the mechanism that makes the U1s massive is not determined locally near the tip of the singularity. It actually depends on the global embedding of the singularity in the Calabi-Yau. So this is an example where essentially the requirement of which U1 is massless actually gives me information about the topology of the global Calabi-Yau. So these omega alphas are the harmonic forms defined globally on the compact Calabi-Yau and have a certain basis for it. And they have a certain norm when integrated over the Calabi-Yau, which I denote by Y. And for each of these harmonic forms, you get a Zuckerberg field in 2 dimensions, a two-form field in 4 dimensions, which you can dualize into a scalar field, and that scalar field is the longitudinal component of the gauge field and can be used to make it massive. Now, a key point is that those harmonic forms, which are defined on the Calabi-Yau, have certain periods around the cycles within the singularity, and this matrix doesn't need to be invertible. And that's what we're going to make use of. Because once you compute what the masses are that follow from this, again, I simplified the formula slightly because you have many brains and many U1s, but roughly the formula looks as follows, is that there's a contribution coming from the rank of the 7 brain, but the key point is that the 5 brain contribution, or at least the contribution that comes from the 2 cycles has this matrix pi in it, and this particular matrix has 0 eigenvalues, provided that this matrix pi, indeed, which is this period matrix of these forms, has 0 eigenvalues. And so the thing that we want to arrange is that the integral over our cycle alpha 4, which is hypercharge, of all these harmonic forms is equal to 0. And that's simply a topological requirement on the corresponding cycle, that if this is the alpha 4 cycle, although I'm drawing a brain here, actually this alpha 4 cycle is not directly wrapped by a fractional brain. There are linear combinations of fractional brains whose charge would add up to that particular cycle. But the key point is that that cycle is trivial within the full Calabi-Yau. If I arrange that, then this previous period integral would have to be equal to 0. So basically what you need to make sure is that this thing can be contracted to a point, and that is not part of the cohomology of the full Calabi-Yau. And with Dave Morrison, we've been discussing that this is actually seems quite easy to arrange. with some proper thinking. So we're trying to look for neat examples where we embed the Del Pezzo singularity in a practical BL with this particular property. So let me wrap up. So with this mechanism, the U1s become massive. Then the question is, how does the global U1 get broken? If you think about it, the Stukeberg field actually is associated with a Ramon-Moore field integrated over some force cycle, and it's basically the KKLT instantons, the D-brain instantons that wrap those cycles, that now generate terms in the Lagrangian that break the U1 symmetry. So it's sort of interesting to think about this from a phenomenological point of view, and this way you sort of have a dial for seeing how in low energy theory how big the U1 breaking effects are. Supersymmetry breaking obviously is an interesting thing to study. Maybe you want to incorporate beyond the standard model physics in this setup as well. Little Higgses actually are rather naturally included, at least in this kind of setup. But partly the philosophy that's going on here is also the following. So Kumrun Fava has been advocating this, the question, okay, let's introduce something, the notion of a swampland, which is the space of quantum field theories that seem consistent on all grounds, but somehow don't allow an embedding in a theory with a UV completion where you have gravity. And there's a geometric analog of that particular program, which is just to sort of say, well, if I have non-compact Calabi-Yau singularities, then basically there's a one-to-one correspondence between a huge chunk of quantum field theory space and these non-compact Calabi-Yau singularities. But there are undoubtedly geometric requirements on non-compact Calabi-Yau singularities that will tell you whether or not it can be embedded in a compact Calabi-Yau. So this is the first set of looking for examples of certain things that may be possible with gravity or may be possible without gravity and not possible with gravity. Coming back to some of the questions, unification of coupling constants and things like that, are things one would like to discuss. So let me...
Questions?
So I got confused about what the scale of the masses of these U1 vector bosons that you're getting rid of will be.
Yeah, it's easy to get confused about that. You would have to sort of go, if you have warping, let me go to this formula. If you have warping, then you have to sort of go pretty carefully through the places where the warping goes. But initially, without warping, this is simply set by the string scale because it's the size of the compactification manifold that goes into it. It's set by that metric, essentially, or at least in some ways. It's the high energy string scale. That would be my current understanding. I don't think that by warping you would actually be lowering these masses.
Okay. So what was the comment about instantons breaking the U1s?
So the comment is the following, is that once you've made the U1s massive, then you can say, okay, well, it survives as a global symmetry. But the point is that this Stukeberg field rho that comes from dualizing the two-form field, again, it shifts under the U1 symmetry, and e to the I rho is the Ramon-Moore field integrated over a force cycle. So the things that actually give you things that break the U1 symmetries are those D instantons.
Well, I have a comment to the previous question and a question afterwards. Some time ago, in fact, we had done a general calculation of anomalous U1 masses, at least in CFT backgrounds in type 1 theory, which don't include the Ramon-Ramon fields. And there you can see that, in fact, the value of the U1 masses depend on ultraviolet details of the theory. And in fact, you would need the full, in fact, Calabi-Yau to define it. And moreover, they can be, in fact, if you have large volumes, they can be also arbitrarily small.
If you make the volume large. So that I think I agree with. But let me make one slight correction, I think, to what you're saying. If you talk about anomalous U1s, then actually this is not quite true. Because basically the mode of the anomalous U1 is actually localized near the bottom of the throat. So the mass that you give to anomalous U1s is a little bit more complicated and is more governed locally whereas the mass that you give to the non-anomalous ions really depend on the non-compact cycles.
In fact, for both anomalous, at least in the explicit examples we analyzed, for both anomalous and non-anomalous ions, you can have contributions which are localized and also contributions which can be very far away. And, well, we can probably discuss
that. Yeah, we can discuss it, but at least I would say that the anomalous ions are associated with cycles whose dual cycle is actually compact. That's why they're anomalous, and that's why their corresponding anomaly, how should I say, the tadpole conditions are sort of something that happens locally. But we can discuss this.
But let me ask also a question. Since you expect that pretty much all weakly coupled, let's say, such theories, you can get them from Calabi-Yau singularities, do you have an idea, for example, how you can get theories which contain, let's say, unified groups like SU5 or
SU10? Yeah, or E8.
Right.
That's why I was saying if I remove the open strings from that particular conjecture, I think I'm more optimistic that one can actually do this. But then you would have to use probably other geometric objects that would make the gauge theory degrees of freedom. But it's an open question. I think, that's the way, it's an interesting question to study, but I think it's an open question. I saw this thing over there.
I'll make a brief comment and then I have a technical question. The brief comment is, I think if you want E8 gauge symmetries or gut groups in F theory, there is actually a lot known about this. In the case with N equals 2 supersymmetry, there's a full dictionary almost of these singularities. You can surely make geometric constructions of E8 gauge theories and theories that have 16s of SO10 and things like this. And it's complicated, but I think we actually know how to do it.
Yeah, actually, and the fact that you had made that comment before to me allowed me to make that
Okay.
A bit stronger than I would have otherwise.
Okay, but my question was, and this is technical, so sorry, but when you talk about these periods, the locus where you're working is this quiver locus, where
that's
the Del Pezzo
right.
has collapsed and all the curves have collapsed. So if you actually wanted to go compute these masses, do you know the mirror, and do you compute these in the mirror, or is this kind of a symbolic statement?
No, the masses are directly computed in the 2B theory. It's not that masses, but you mean in terms of the parameters of the corresponding gauge theory. Let's say that this particular mechanism of the U1s is completely governed by the geometry of the 2B closed string fields.
What I'm worried about is that these periods involve integrals of powers of the Kähler form over really tiny cycles. So presumably they're corrected.
No, I think this information is completely holomorphic. It's because these are harmonic forms.
So you think there aren't instanton corrections?
There are no instanton corrections to this particular notion of the periods.
Huh.
Because the it's not. Yeah, I don't think. Okay, to the extent that this is that just the naive Kaluza-Klein reduction of the Ramon-Mohr fields is a good approximation, then these formulas hold. So it's about the dynamics of the Ramon-Mohr fields. But you may be right. Clearly, at least that's a general part of the story, that there is certainly for the other gauge theory parameters, there's this dependence on corrections, above prime corrections near the singularity.
So in calculating neutrino masses, would you have to know more about the theory because of if they were generated by the seesaw mechanism?
That's a good question as well. I would sort of put this a little bit in the question that were asked before, sort of about, for example, the proton decay. If there's indeed physics that is a direct window into grand unified scales, then you sort of have to, at this level, you have to sort of put that in almost by hand. So the masses that naturally come out of the quiver dynamics are actually Dirac masses. So if you want to play this game with the Majorana masses, actually, you would only look at the effective field theory at that level. So the neutrino physics here indeed is I think, another example where eventually, once you go to the gut scale, there's probably more information you would need to add to this.
This is the last question.
Would it be possible to consider situations where the compact space, which may be problematic, is not actually Calabi-Yau? So where you have a more general geometry there, but the region near the singularity is still Calabi-Yau?
That was sort of the suggestion I was making earlier, is that for the generic string compactification, the compact region, the Planck scale region of the of the string compactification may even not be describable by any of the methods that we have available right now. But part of the idea of this is that at some level, precisely because of what you said, is that if the stuff locally near the singularity is Calabi-Yau, and then I don't care about what happens far away, that's precisely why I'm sort of advocating this particular setup, because I don't need to make many assumptions about what happens at the point, as long as this structure here, local structure, is not too drastically influenced.
Okay, thank you.